the canine condition. Come, sit, stay. Welcome to season two of the Canine Condition Podcast. I am your host, Jackie Pignol. Each episode is a conversation with a trustworthy dog rescue organization or animal welfare advocate that will leave you inspired and empowered. This is the why, where, and how to adopt or help a canine family member. The goal is to save homeless dogs and set you up for success with information and resources to raise and keep a healthy and well-balanced dog. Embark on this journey with me, and let's save humans' best friend together. Ever since I started the journey with the Canine Condition documentary, I have this internal radar that senses when and where I need to help dogs in need. In 2016, an elementary school friend who I had reconnected with on social media would often post pictures of her foster dogs, and those posts always made me smile. I had to ask her about them, and after inquiring, she told me she was fostering for a rescue called Love Leo Rescue. So here was another rescue organization not far from me that I had never heard of. That meant the problem in my own city was bigger than I had realized at the time. I decided to follow Love Leo Rescue online and connect with them to see how I could help spread their message so more dogs and humans could be helped. Love Leo Rescue, or LLR, is a 501c3 foster-based rescue located in Los Angeles, California. Many of the dogs they rescue are sick, injured, abandoned, or forgotten. LLR has a soft spot for dogs that need special medical care in order to make it out of the shelter because they take into account that most adopters will not be able to adopt a dog from the shelter that needs a costly orthopedic surgery or a puppy that is ill with parvo. Love Leo Rescue steps in time after time to offer the medical care, the love and attention each dog they take under their wing needs in order to see them blossom into a healthy, happy, adoptable dog. It is such a pleasure to have as my guest on the podcast today, the founder of Love Leo Rescue, Sasha Abelson. Welcome to the Canine Condition Podcast, Sasha.
Thank you.
It's so nice to get to have this conversation about your wonderful organization, Love Leo Rescue. And as I have explained to my listeners how I found out about Love Leo Rescue, I would love for you to share with us why it's named Love Leo Rescue and tell us the story of how you founded this organization.
Sure. So Leo was the name of my late great pit bull, Leo. I had adopted him when I was in law school living on the East Coast, and I had just lost my purebred French bulldog and kind of decided to do a full 180 and went on Pet Finder and found this pit bull in New Jersey that needed a home and knew nothing about the breed, brought him home, and he ended up living with me in Vermont for about a year and a half, and then we moved out to California together. And unfortunately, he passed away pretty young at 6 years old from lymphoma. So I kind of wanted to make sure that his life had some long-term meaning. And I got involved in rescue through just volunteering. And that turned into volunteering every weekend. And eventually, a couple of years later, I founded Love Leo in his honor. So I wanted his name to kind of have purpose and help other dogs in need, which is what he's kind of been doing from the other side for the past 6 to 7 years now.
I love that. It's like his legacy he left behind, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Right. And you had said, you know, one of the things that you expressed to us in the documentary interview, which we are going to be able to see in 2022, is that once you saw, when you adopted Leo, you became aware of this problem that you didn't know was happening. And you couldn't unknow what you knew then. What was that like? Was that just like a light bulb went off, or was it a slow discovery because you did start volunteering, like you just said?
Yeah, it was actually a really slow discovery. I mean, I found Leo on Pet Finder. It was a very easy process. I drove, I picked him up, I brought him home. I didn't see much, and I still didn't know that much about what our shelter system looks like. And it wasn't until I came out to Los Angeles, I randomly found a stray dog, another pit bull on the street, and long story short, a rescue helped me with him and helped me get him, Lee Goldberg, helped me eventually get him in a home and neutered him and everything for me. I was just a mere person, didn't know how to go about it. So they helped me, and we got that dog in a home. His name was Steve. And to kind of pay it forward to them, I said, oh, let me help them out on the weekends and a couple hours here, a couple hours there. And then finally from there, I said, okay, let me go to the shelters. Let me see what it's... It was a very gradual process because it's definitely intimidating. And so, you know, I think that first weekend that I volunteered in the shelters, I left and I just got in my car and cried. It was just horrible and heartbreaking and overwhelming. And so at that point, I kind of went, okay, yeah, I can't go back to life as usual because there's a lot of stuff that needs to be. There's not a lot of work that needs to be done. And knowing that all those dogs are just sitting there kind of hopeless without your help is a fire that you just can't ignore. And so, like I said, it was still a slow process before I started Love Leo, but I became more active in rescue. And then eventually I had another full-time position at a nonprofit. And eventually I just said, this is what I need to do. This is where I think I can be the most help. And so that's when I founded Love Leo.
I love that. And now that you mentioned Lee, which I had previously mentioned in my introduction that my friend from elementary school was fostering for a dog rescue, and that's how I found Love Leo Rescue. I'm going to have to bring Lee on the podcast at some point because she's such a lovely inspiration to why fostering saves lives. And I know that you're a foster-based rescue. So talk to us about how difficult that is, but how important, and it's like the key factor to you being successful in saving these dogs.
Sure. So there's a lot of rescues that are very well funded and have their own facilities and kennels, and that's awesome and great. But having a foster home is helpful for two reasons. One, we don't have a facility. So our dogs have to go somewhere when they get out of the shelter. They need to go somewhere, and we don't have a facility to put them in. So the next step is a foster home. And though it would be nice to have a facility because it definitely makes you have a greater reach and you can save more dogs, the foster home is such an important step because it gets that animal used to living in a home environment. So they've gone from, we don't know, possibly living in a backyard or the streets to a shelter, and then you bring them home and then you teach them, you kind of get them adoption ready. So you teach them to sleep in a crate and to be house trained and to walk on leash and to not be scared of the television. And so all these things that get them when they do get adopted, all these new experiences aren't so shocking to them. They've been in a home. And on top of that, we get to know the dog really well. So we can better place them. If a dog's in an adoption center or a kennel environment, you really don't know that dog very well. You don't know, you know, are they house trained? Are they good with kids? Do they bark a lot? So having them under a roof with a person, A, both helps that dog get ready, but it also helps us place that dog in the best environment for its forever home. So we know if it's an active dog, is it a lazy dog? Does it steal things off the counter? You know, we can help the adopters be more prepared.
Right, right. Yeah, I love that. I'm a very big fan of foster home-based rescues for that very reason. You almost know what you're getting more than if you just take a chance and have to go through that process yourself as the adopter, which many times I see people take that chance, and we want them to, with the dogs at the shelter. But then if something doesn't fit and they're not willing to do the work, they return the dog to the shelter.
Right,
and
for sure.
It's just, you know, it's heartbreaking, but you know, and speaking of heartbreak, a lot of people that I've met won't foster because they go, oh gosh, but I could never let them go. Or, oh my gosh, what if this and that? And there's, you know, there's a million excuses, right?
Sure.
And all surely valid. I mean, people have the right to feel emotional and not want to let go. But you said something also, and I want to point back to some of the quotes you gave us in the documentary, is that you have to know what your role is and know how incredibly powerful that role is to the journey of that one dog.
Sure.
So having said that, how would you pitch the idea of foster or advocacy for, you know, fostering?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. I think also in the beginning, you definitely, listen, we have a lot of foster fails, right? So that means someone fosters and then says, like, I have to keep this dog. And that's fine as long as, you know, I kind of say to them, look, please continue to foster for us because we don't want to lose you. You're welcome to keep that dog, but we don't want to lose you as a foster because you're such an important bridge for this dog to have from the shelter to a home. So yeah, that is your role. Your role isn't to keep every dog. Your role is to get that dog ready for a home. And, you know, but for you, that dog won't get out of the shelter. And so we really do rely on our foster homes so heavily. And that is your role. And so, like, there's been, you know, many dogs that I would have loved to have kept, but I just said, I can't keep all the dogs because I'll go to jail. So, so I just say, I can't keep all the dogs. There's an amazing home out there for this dog and I'm going to find it. And then I can save another dog. So that's kind of just, you're just helping them get ready. That's kind of your, that's your place. And like I said, there's definitely going to be one down the road that you have to have and you must keep. And that's fair, but you know, you have to start out with knowing that you're a helper. You're not an adopter, you're a helper. Yeah.
And I see that when people want to foster, they apply, right? Do they apply kind of like getting approved like an adopter, but you're just a temporary home? And what's the process like with Love
Leo Rescue? It's the same process, except for there's no adoption fee. And then a couple of the questions might be slightly different, but essentially it's the same thing. If you're good enough to adopt a dog, you're good enough to foster and vice versa. So they're, you know, the same safety requirements, the same, you know, how long is the dog going to be home alone? Where do you feed the dogs? How many dogs do you have? Do you live in an apartment? It's all, those are all the same questions.
Gotcha. Okay, great. So yeah, I always, you know, advocate and I tell my listeners, if you or anyone you know is even willing to foster for 1 month, I mean, would that help you, Sasha? If somebody said, look, I can do it for a month or 6 weeks, is that good enough or does it need to be kind of like a longer term?
Definitely. I mean, some dogs get adopted in a week. Some dogs I've had for 2 years. So it just depends on the dog. We obviously don't want to bounce the dogs from home to home. So if someone's like, oh, I can foster for a week. You know, that's not super helpful because that's more confusing to the dog than it is helpful. We'd rather have someone that can commit. And like I said, you know, a lot of the dogs do get adopted within a month or 2 months, but some dogs stay around longer. And like, for example, now it's the holidays. And so I'm shuffling dogs around because a lot of my fosters are going out of town. So I have to move dogs. And, you know, I hate doing that because they get settled in a routine and then they have to move somewhere else. But it is better than being in the shelter. So
absolutely. Right. Especially during the holidays. And do you know how many dogs you've saved to date? Like estimate? It must be thousands, right?
Probably by now, yeah, for sure. We have a new database that we started using last year, so we'll definitely be able to keep better track of how many dogs we're saving on an annual basis. But before that, it was all manual contracts and emails. So now we're entering the the new century. But yeah, we'll have a better record going forward. But I would say on any given month, we have somewhere between like 15 and 20 dogs in our care. Again, some of those are dogs that we've had for a year. And some of them are puppies that are going to be adopted in 2 weeks. So it varies, but that's kind of like, I would say, a rough number of the dogs that we just generally have at one given time.
And in the course of the 6 years or 6+ years you've been with your organization, would you say it's gotten better? Some areas are better than others, or would you say we still have a lot of work to do?
It's exactly the same. Nothing has changed.
Really?
Nothing has changed except for the lives of those dogs that have found homes, right? So that's definitely something, and that's very important. So we've saved a lot of lives, and myself and other rescues have helped enormously put these dogs in homes. But the numbers, as far as I can see them, are this exact same. And I know a lot of people that stop volunteering at the shelters because they're like, we're just doing the same thing every year, and nothing changes. And unfortunately, you know, there's this kind of hype about LA being no kill. Unfortunately, that's just not accurate.
It's not. No, it's not true. I mean, it's a goal, and I'm sure some organizations, that's their goal, but
it's a great goal.
Definitely not there.
But saying that we're there when we're not is not helpful because it kind of takes the fire. It lowers the fire, and people think, oh, well, we're no kill, so we don't have to worry about it. And the reality is that LA and it's just as bad. Just as bad.
Absolutely. And I wish people would understand the part that if the shelters get totally full, what are they supposed to do?
Right. It's not the shelter's fault. There's definitely ways that, you know, shelters are underfunded and understaffed. And so a lot of times there are, you know, things that could be done better. But generally speaking, it's not the fault of the shelter. It's the fault of society looking at these animals as, you know, disposable and not spaying and neutering. And like, just over the last 2 or 3 years, I guess with Game of Thrones, this is an example of like how society contributes. Huskies have become really popular, so everyone wanted a wolf dog. I didn't watch Game of Thrones, so that's me. But
I watched it, and I got to tell you, I saw the same craze right after the show was over.
Yeah. And the number of huskies right now in the shelters is as many as the pit bulls that used to be. And so, and they're wonderful dogs. They're extremely active. They're vocal. They're athletic. And so they're definitely not for everyone. And they're gorgeous. And so it's tempting, but they are so many huskies. And it's just like, I could put my finger on any list on any shelter and find, you know, 10 huskies on the euthanasia list. So this is society. This is society going, we want this pretty dog. And then they make too many of them. And now there's nowhere for them to go.
Right. And then people don't realize it's a working breed. They need to stay active. They need to stay engaged and have a job. They're not going to just sit pretty.
And then when they hit like 8 months to a year old, then nobody wants to deal with them anymore because, oh my, they require, you know, exercise and they get out of the yard. And so it's disheartening. But that's a societal problem that has nothing to do with the shelters, you know.
Right.
So.
And then they end up at the shelters and then everyone's, you know, throwing their arms up going, oh, how can the shelter? Well, you know. So, you know, that snowball effect. And you have talked to me about that bigger picture solution. So we go back to the topic of spay and neuter that you had just mentioned. You know, not enough people spaying and neutering the animals, which is why you're a very big advocate, and I've always seen your rescue do these big programs. You collaborate with other rescues. Tell us about that mission, why you find that that's better than just saving just one dog at a time as your only mission.
Sure. So like on any given day, we can, we do a clinic once a month. We've been holding a clinic once a month in an area called El Monte, which is a underserved area in Los Angeles. It's a low-income area. And so we hold a mobile clinic, and it's an incredible organization called Spay for LA. Basically, they come out with their truck. We pay the bill. They have an incredible vet and vet techs. And we can spay and neuter from 25 to 35 dogs and cats on a typical clinic day. That costs us about $3,500. And so why that's so important is because every single time we do a clinic, we have a wait list of people that still want to get into our clinic, but we don't have the manpower to cover, you know, to get their animals in. So the desire is there, and these people truly want to have their animals fixed. They just can't afford it. And unfortunately, the city and the state are not providing appropriate solutions to that. They're not providing easily accessible vouchers. So our clinic is, you know, you make an appointment with us and you show up, no questions asked. We don't ask about income, proof of residency. I've had people drive up there in a brand new Mercedes. I don't care. I had people come up there with teacup Yorkies and French Bulldogs. I don't care.
Right.
You're coming to get your dog fixed. Let's just do this. You know, you're going to get all kinds, but the goal is just, let's just not have more dogs be created to flood the shelter system. So it's the single most important thing that we can do to help, you know, truly empty the shelters. We're never going to empty.
Clearly they agree because they're advocating for spay and neuter.
We're never going to empty the shelters through rescue. That's just not, it's not feasible. There's not enough people in the world to give all these dogs and cats home. So spaying and neutering prevented them. I always put it in quotes, unwanted animals, because they're not unwanted, but they don't need to be born. And so that's their single most important thing that we can do. And so it was hard in the beginning because we didn't have funding, and it was scary to write that first check because we were much smaller and we didn't have the funding. And I just said, we have to, this is like part of our mission. So we have to do this. So, and then once we did, like it snowballed, and then someone else was like, that's great. Can we donate? And you know, it was slow. It didn't happen overnight, but now we do, we have a coalition of other rescues. I wish every rescue would do it. I wish even if every rescue just did one clinic a year, just one clinic a year. That would make such a huge difference. And I hate to say it, but rescues that aren't doing spay and neuter aren't doing the right thing, because you got to focus on preventative measures and then, you know, deal with the aftermath of all these quote unquote unwanted dogs. But
which they'll end up taking in if they don't stop it at the source.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. They're going to end up somewhere they're going to need help down the road. So we might as well prevent it from happening in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you mentioned the process, how easy it is, because I'll tell you, in different states, and as I've traveled around the country or now spoken to people around the country through the podcast, yes, there's a lot of hesitancy because people don't want to show up and show you their gas or their DWP bill or their income or an address. You know, sometimes they're staying with someone and renting a room and they don't want to give out their address. So just because of that, they won't spay neuter. And people shouldn't have to show that when they want to spay neuter an animal. I mean, it's just like, get it done.
the end result is the same. That animal's not going to procreate. So I had many years ago tried to help my neighbor and I had to get him proof of income. I don't know if he worked off the books. I don't know what his story was, but he didn't have it. And so I was like, I wanted to get him to in through a program through the city and he couldn't get me his bills. I don't know. I didn't get that involved. But long story short, as another rescue helped me. They said, don't worry about it. Just bring him to our clinic. We'll get it done. And not only did he get his dog spayed, he drove to the valley. He picked up his brother's dog an hour each way and I said, can I get her spayed too? And we got them both spayed. So not only did he want to, and he made a donation towards it. So it's like, not only did he want to, not only was he willing to, he could pay $100. He couldn't just pay $700, which is a lot of, you know, vets are charging $700-$800 for a spay surgery. So, and his brother, the word got out and then his cousin wanted his dog spayed. So it's like, provide them with the resources and they will take advantage of it. They'll be so happy. People are waiting online for our clinic. So I wish we could do more, but unfortunately we're not as well funded as some of the bigger rescues. So we do what we can. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I love that. And you know what I have seen too, is that you're even doing spay neuter clinics in Tijuana, Mexico, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about that. You know, I know sometimes there's people that feel hesitant to hear that rescues help dogs internationally, but I want to turn that conversation around because I've also been educated in that area. I thought so too. I used to think, well, gosh, we have so many in need here. Why are we helping international? I know why now, but I want to hear what your thoughts are and your perspective.
There's two parts to that story. One part is, I think anywhere, it's liquid, right? It's a dog. So it doesn't matter if the dog's in Mexico or the dog's here. It's a dog that's going to have puppies. The chances are in Mexico, it's probably going to end up on the street, hit by a car, getting parvo. We rescue a lot of dogs from Mexico. And unfortunately, the living situation there is very difficult for them. It's right. A very low income area. And so I mean, the situations that we get these dogs out of is heartbreaking. And they living, I mean, we have many stories that we documented of, it happens here in Los Angeles too, but it's heartbreaking there because it's a low income area and they don't have the funds to take care of these dogs. So they'll end up, you know, with great suffering. So if we can spay and neuter, you know, several mom dogs down there and prevent a bunch of puppies running the streets, that means those are puppies that eventually won't have to be rescued, whether it's by me or someone in Mexico or another rescue. And a lot of the dogs we get there do have parvo or distemper, and that costs thousands and thousands of dollars to fix. So if we can spend $30 or $40 getting that animal fixed down there, it's money well spent. You're actually saving money. So,
and the vaccines, are you able to give them the parvo and distemper vaccines?
We do vaccines as well. Yes. You know, unfortunately these dogs are going into, I think they get rabies and they get DHPP, but unfortunately they're going into not the best circumstances afterwards. You know, they have homes, but they might be outdoor dogs. So we can't give them the whole leptospirosis and the flu vaccine and everything, but we certainly do what we can to help them like be healthier and happier, you know,
right,
going
I
forward.
Hear happy paws around you. Oh, I love that. It's okay.
So
it's a dog podcast.
Husky. That's a husky, so to speak.
I love it.
So the other issue, I mean, I do take issue with is people importing dogs here. We have rescued a couple of dogs from Iran and obviously Mexico, which I consider like our sister down south. But, you know, there are rescues that focus entirely on getting dogs out of other countries. And I have to say that, you know, I've noticed a couple of rescues that are like, they only rescue golden retrievers from China or, well, and I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, you know.
Yeah, no.
And, you know, it costs thousands of dollars to fly them here. And I guess if they balance that out with doing some good for the dogs that are living in this country and spaying and neutering or providing vaccines or whatever, that would be great. But I do think that there's, you know, there's a line to draw where we rescue dogs from Iran. We've rescued maybe 10 over the 5 years, 6 years, like not a lot, but these dogs have zero chance of getting, they take them in from the, you know, if they're injured on the street, they'll take them in. And then if they don't find a rescue, they have to turn them back out on the street because people don't really have dogs as pets. So, and it's very expensive. So it costs us money to fly the dog here and then we have to get the dog vetted here. So, you know, financially it doesn't make sense. But again, I look at it as a dog is a dog, you know.
Yeah.
What do you do?
It's a sentient being. It's a life. And if it's suffering and you can help.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But I think that there has to be some balance. And, you know, we should focus on the dogs that are around us. And if you want to import dogs from China that are golden retrievers or French bulldogs, that's awesome. But then at least do something here to help the shelter dogs. Yeah, exactly. The street dogs. And so,
absolutely.
So that's kind of my two cents on that.
No, and I hear you. And I, you know, we all have our opinions and based on experience or what we've seen and heard. And like you, I think as long as you're helping the cause here, if you're a licensed rescue in the United States, you absolutely have to try and make a difference to stand behind that cause because...
Yeah, you can do both. That's the thing is you can do both. You can do both. You can, you know, rescue, you know, these dogs from... the meat trade dogs, it's a very sensitive subject because it's a horrible situation. However... rescuing them isn't going to solve the problem. They're just going to make more. So you need to work legislatively with the governments. I mean, and also, who are we to say what other people should eat? We eat cows and we eat pigs and we eat chickens. So just because we love dogs more, I guess, you know, so that's another whole different conversation.
It's a very interesting topic. And we don't think of it that way because in our minds, it just doesn't compute that we would ever eat a dog.
Yeah.
But we are not in the shoes of those people who have grown up and culturally seen it as completely acceptable.
Right. I mean, I don't eat cows and I don't eat pigs and I don't eat chickens either. So that's just me. That's my choice. But, you know, when we get involved, like I said, if you really want to stop that because you think it's wrong, okay, that's fine. But you're not going to stop it by rescuing your way out of it because...
Just like here.
Yeah. They can make as many dogs. And if you're going to buy them from meat markets... you're just basically creating supply and demand. So for me, it's just a
It's like the puppy mill. I equate it to the puppy mill. If we keep buying these puppies and people keep buying from the pet stores, the puppy mills will continue to make them. So that's how...
It's supply and demand. It's easy peasy. It's not brain surgery. So it's like, yeah. So I just wish that these people that would spend all these time, money, and resources and really get people's heartstrings pulled, I just wish that they would focus on, if that's their passion, then they need to start working internationally and... dealing with the governments and figuring out a way to like either, you know, regulate it or shut it down. But bringing those dogs here, it does. It floods the market with, you know, foreign dogs. And actually, a couple of years ago, someone that I know was rescuing dogs from China, and one of the dogs came here and died from a very contagious disease, like 3 days after it got here. It was actually Korea. You know, they're coming here with potentially not properly vetted and bringing to, so there's a whole can of worms that you open when you start importing dogs. And so
especially en masse, when it's not just one or a specific case, but it's like 10, 20, 30, and it's more than once, you know. And it's a touchy subject because they're all sentient beings. And listen, if I was there, I would want to save them there and do something. My question has always been, and perhaps it's something for me to look into and see what organization I could, you know, pick their brain about this. But, you know, if we can't save them all here, we can't save them all there.
100%, yeah.
And can we help those cultures learn or push for better laws in their own country so that they have better treatment of animals?
Yes.
Instead of us having to take on the burden as Americans to do it for everybody.
That's exactly right.
Not an easy thing to do, so I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just putting it out there because it's something that goes through my mind a lot, especially when you travel. Anytime I travel abroad, I'm like, oh gosh, what am I going to see? How many dogs and where and how and, you know, that whole thing. So I definitely, and some people may not want to adopt or rescue, but if anyone out there is interested in advocacy and legislation, in pitching ideas for campaigns online, we have a need in every area. And even I at the Canine Condition can connect you with people currently working on legislation that will affect dogs all over the country and hopefully internationally in a positive way. So I could definitely at least point you in the right direction. I wanted to ask you about some of the doggies that have been saved with Love Leo Rescue, particularly the story of Freya, which touched my heart, and I followed it on your social media. And she was adopted last year, correct?
She was adopted in 2021, yes.
Tell us how she was saved, how you found out about her, and her journey to adoption.
I think it was like late on a Sunday night, like the last time you want to get a call about a dog. All the vets are closed and transporters are tucked in their beds. And Rita Blackwell, who's an amazing advocate for shelter animals, and she goes there and takes pictures and facilitates helping rescues getting the dogs out and really puts these dogs on social media and gets them seen and gets them saved. And that's her tagline, is seen and saved. She, I think, texted me about this dog at like, I think it was a Sunday night. She's like, can you help her? She's been burned. And I was like, oh God, well, let me just think about it. And she's like, well, if you want, I can start asking around. And I just looked at her. I said, no, I gotta take this dog. Something about her. I just knew I wanted to help her. So I called up our vet that was open late that night. And I think Rita transported her because that's how awesome she is. And she had been burned in a house fire in Lancaster. And I think 7 of the other dogs on the property died. And she was the only one that lived. Wow. And the family lost their house and they were living in the garage, I think. And they were trying to treat her burns at home. Aww. So you can't even imagine, like, just raw skin on half her body and just, I don't know what they were putting on it. It was horrible. And so they got her to the shelter, which is definitely a step up, but they're not equipped to handle like a complicated case like that with bandage changes and antibiotics. And so she stayed at our vet for about a week and they did all her medical care. And like, despite this, she's a little bulldog pit bull mix. I mean, despite the excruciating pain she must have been, and she was just so happy, and she wagged her little tail. She always ate all her food, just an angel. And so she kind of won the hearts of everyone. And then she came to me because I decided to foster her, because that's what happens. And just was like a happy, goofy, like, you would never know she had a bad day in her life, even though she's, you know, scarred for life. And she had burns. I think probably a third of her body was covered with really, really deep burns. And this was 2 weeks. I mean, she was already 2 weeks into it by the time I got her. So it had already healed. I could hardly look at it. I mean, it was bad. And so she kind of came here and blossomed and got along with everyone and wagged her tail and jumped for treats. And then she found an incredible family down in Long Beach, and she's been adopted. And that's where she lives now.
Oh, I love that. It's so great, especially because, you know, they're such good dogs. She had such a good demeanor, and it was just this horrible accident, and then her family had to give her up, obviously. So
yeah, and we never know anything. Sometimes, like, when you take on a medical emergency dog like that, you don't know about their temperament. So I don't know. Was she dog friendly? I didn't know anything. But, like, I was just like, I got to take a chance on her because she's just so awesome, and she just needs so much help. And even at the shelter, she was wagging her tail. And then they have Rita kind of films them coming out of the shelter, their freedom walk. And she's just like waggling her little butt and kissing the, animal control officer, like didn't have any resentment or bad feelings, like, even though she'd been through all that. So she was just a very, and even her mom, her human now, just calls me sometimes. She's like, what a resilient, incredible little soul she is. So she's living her best life now. Yeah.
That is wonderful. I love it. And for anyone who doesn't already follow Love Leo Rescue, obviously we're going to get that information from Sasha. But the stories that you share, and I just love seeing them from the very beginning through to that adoption photo. It just feels like your heart is complete. So you must get that a lot. I mean, is that what keeps you going? What keeps you going? Because I know this isn't an easy journey.
It's not. Like, our model is we take less dogs maybe than some of the other rescues. Not, I mean, we take a decent amount of dogs, but each dog is a story. Each dog has a story and a journey. And I think it's not just a catalog of adoptable dogs. It's each dog has a personality, and they have a voice, and they have something to say, and they have a lesson to teach. And so that's what's fun for me about it, is finding that dog's story. Like, it's not just like, hey, adopt this puppy and adopt that story. Like, you'll see, like, on our stories, we'll even say, like, this dog came from here. We like to give some background. We like people to get to know that they're individuals, that they're not just, you're not just, you know, browsing through a catalog of adoptable dogs. It's, and so people really follow our dogs and their stories. And, like, I've actually gone out to have drinks at happy hour or whatever, and someone will come up to me, they'll be like, it'll come up lovely, and they'll be like, oh, I've been following the story of that dog or this dog. Like, they know our dogs by name, which I love, because it just, they're like little celebrities. They have their little, you know, and people know about their journey. And that to me is very important, because it humanizes the dog, but it humanizes the dog. It makes them, you know, it makes them individuals instead of just like a rescue dog, you know?
Exactly. No, I love that. And I don't want to spoil too much, because we're going to share the story of Rocky in the Love Leo Rescue documentary episode for the canine condition. But I did want to touch upon the fact that I happened to be visiting a shelter to help save another dog. And I see this boy, Rocky, senior dog surrendered by his family. And of course, I wanted to help get him out. I didn't know how to. What I did is I posted him on my social media and started asking people to help me find a rescue or a foster. I did that for a couple weeks. weeks. And I know that eventually I text you, Sasha, and I was like, hey, because I'm sure you get solicited.
You advocated for him pretty hard. And yeah. I love that because it showed that he was special and that you were going to be his, you know, his champion. And you did. Like, but for you, he wouldn't have gotten out 100%. Like, he would still, he wouldn't have made it out.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny, you don't think that in the moment. All I knew is I went to the shelter once a week. You know, it's far for me to drive out there, but I went once a week. They allowed me to take pictures and videos and show that he really was wonderful. Just because he had a little gray in his muzzle didn't mean, yeah, oh, this dog's at the end of its life. No way. This guy has a life way ahead of him. And
sure.
So, yeah, sure. And what I loved is that you said, if we can find a foster, yes. And that was my biggest thing is obviously I would have fostered him in a heartbeat. But of course, I, the, you know, canine condition lady here has six of her own now because I foster failed so many times. But it's that one step was keeping me from getting him rescued. And I realized how important it is that people just step up and take a chance because he's a wonderful dog.
Yes, and we won't ruin the story, but yeah, but he's not the kind of dog you want to put in a vet for boarding. Like, he needs to be in a home. He's an old man.
Right.
Like, he's been through it already. So, you know, and I can't take every dog here because that's just not possible. So it is the key, and it like goes back to what you were talking about before, you know, fostering corny, but it really does save lives.
Yeah, it does. So we're going to leave that one with a cliffhanger, and you all can tune into the episode once it's ready to air later in the year. So Sasha, tell us where, you know, new audience and listeners can find and follow Love Leo Rescue and support your mission.
Great. Yeah, super easy. It's just loveleorescue.org. That's our website. And then Instagram is loveleorescue and Facebook is loveleorescue. So you just plug our name in and we'll be there. And you'll find out ways that you can become a foster, an adopter, you can donate. Yeah, that'll all be on our website or on our Instagram page.
So somebody, let's just say somebody out there has $3,500, let's just say,
and
they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Could they sponsor a spay and neuter clinic?
They absolutely could. And you would help, you know, 30 animals be spayed and neutered. If you did that in Mexico, if you wanted to sponsor a clinic in Mexico, you'd actually be helping 120 animals, dogs and cats, be getting spayed and neutered. So all sizes, all breeds. So our money goes, you know, further in Mexico just because the vets are cheaper and everything. But either way, it's an incredible investment and it's something that you can pat yourself on the back and go, you know what? I actually am going to make a difference in the lives of either 35 or 120 animals, and not only for those animals, but for the people that love them. And that's what I kind of want to drive home is that, you know, these dogs are going to not stray as much. They're just going to, some of the male dogs might not have as much aggression. It just, it makes for, you know, a better environment for the dog and the human. And that's really important.
And that's what we want. Absolutely. Well, I will have the live links for Love Leo Rescue in the show notes for this episode. So anyone can easily scroll down and find you with one easy click. Our listeners should also know that I am not getting paid to advocate for any one individual or organization on this podcast. I choose to interview guests from organizations that I know are doing the good work for dogs and for people across America. Thank you, Sasha, for sharing all of this knowledge and experience that you've gained through these years. We hope to inspire more people and more of our listeners to share this information with their friends and family, because that way the network grows and we help more dogs along the way.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you to Love Leo Rescue. You guys are awesome.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Besides saving and adopting out one dog at a time, thinking about the big picture, like Sasha mentioned, is necessary as all dog rescue organizations continue to battle the problem of homeless dog overpopulation in the United States. If you ever feel like you can sponsor a spay or a neuter, just know that if each of us did that for one dog, we would literally see a considerable drop in the number of dogs that end up abandoned and filling up our shelters across the country. So I'll leave you with some food for thought for 2022. Maybe you, or you along with a group of friends, can raise the money to sponsor one spay or one neuter for a homeless dog. Or if you want to sponsor a spay-neuter event for dogs whose families need the help, you will officially become a huge part of the solution to this problem. Love Leo Rescue is one place to start. They, among the many organizations that dedicate themselves day in and day out to this cause, would welcome your help in this area. Check out the show notes to find Love Leo Rescue and connect with them. Thank you for joining me for this episode. Please press subscribe on our podcast and tell your dog-loving friends about it. Until next time, hang on to those leashes. The Canine Condition. Come, sit, stay.